Welcome to episode 154 of the Linux Lugcast. We are an open podcast / lug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. We encourage anyone listening to join us and participate on the podcast. You can check out linuxlugcast.com for the server details. Really, all you need to do is install a Mumble client, and Mumble clients are available on, well, all major desktop distros and all major cell phone distros. Mobile distros, that's the word I was looking for. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss and are unable to join us during the live show, you can always send us an email feedback@linuxlugcast.com. You can also check out our MeWe page, and you can check us out on IRC. I am still keeping an eye on that. We're in the Freenode server in the room, # LinuxLugcast. I am your host for this evening, Honky Magoo. With us tonight is Fweeb.
Good evening.
Joe.
I might have had a drink.
Minix.
I'm sober.
And Netminer.
I'm here somewhere.
There you are. All right. So just a real quick, right before we started the show, I was talking about, so my everyday Android cell phone has been having problems charging. And so I've been seriously looking at the different operating systems for the Pine phone as to, is there a operating system that I could possibly get along with on a daily basis, as basically use it as my daily driver for a while until either A, I get things sorted out with my regular cell phone, or just use this as my daily driver. So Minix had asked what my feelings were on the different Linux, the different distros for the Pine phone, and why I would choose one over the other type of a thing. So I always go to the Pine phone software release page. That's where they kind of list out all of the distros for the Pine phone. So real quick, we've talked about this before. There's basically, what is there, four major mobile desktop environments that are out there right now. There's, you know, UBports has Unity. There's the GTK Fosh, which was put out by the PureOS people initially. There's KDE Plasma, and there's Sailfish OS. There's other ones too, like there's Nix OS, Loon OS. Nix OS is, let's go down here. See, Nix OS is,
I was going to say, like Fosh and KDE Plasma, those are like graphical environments, aren't they?
That's what I'm talking about. There's like four major graphical environments. Like Loon OS runs on it's kind of based on Web OS, but the current version of Loon OS, like it'll install and you can get the screen up for like a minute or two, but it won't do anything past that. And I am not sure about Nix OS. I'm not sure if that was one of the ones I just haven't tried, or whether I tried and I couldn't get it to work right. But for the most part, Sailfish OS, Unity, KDE, and Fosh. It happens sometimes when I hold down the button for a long period of time. And then you have the underlying distros. You know, you're the only ones who use Unity or Sailfish OS would be Sailfish OS and UBports. But so the other two major players would be the Fosh, which is what a lot of people use, and KDE Plasma, which is used by Postmarket OS. Like Postmarket OS, you can choose between KDE Plasma and Fosh. There is a Manjaro version that runs KDE Plasma, but it's the Wi-Fi doesn't work on it, so I basically gave that about 10 minutes. I loaded it up and there's nothing else I could really do with it. And then obviously KDE Neon. And then, so why am I talking about the desktop, the mobile desktop environment? Well, so right now it seems that Fosh is the most stable mobile desktop environment. The problem is Fosh is very lackluster. There's no frills to it at all. I mean, the base thing is just a blank screen that you can do nothing with. You can't put any widgets on at all. You would touch the bottom of the screen, which comes up with your menu and with all of your applications. settings, and you can, which you can bring back down to just a blank screen that you can't do, put anything on. And
no clock or anything.
No clock, nothing. It's just a blank screen. And so it's not very pretty at all, but it's also very stable. Like I've tried, so KDE Neon people put out like daily build, or you know, the nightly builds, and I've tried a bunch of them, and I've run into all sorts of problems where like the keyboard will just be not visible on the screen. It's there. You can touch at the screen where those keys would be and it would do it, but that's incredibly difficult to do because you're just guessing where those buttons are. So I've run into problems with KDE Neon, but it is a beautiful UI. UbiPorts, and so the other two, you know, UbiPorts, Unity and Sailfish OS are very beautiful UIs. So let's go with stable. The most stable one I think I've played with would be Mobian, which is the Debian build with, but it uses the Fosh UI. They're actually one of the only people too who have the application running. So it seems like most people have most of them have figured out how to get the camera working, but they have not gotten a application to use the camera yet. So they haven't know it's written an application to use the camera yet. A lot of them tried using Cheese apparently, and that just didn't work out. So they all started off using Cheese and whatever, they couldn't, no one can get it, that working with that. But Mobian has somehow come up with an application that actually uses the camera. I don't necessarily need the camera, but it's nice to know that I could have if I needed it. And
I was going to ask you before you get into these, like coming from your Android phone, what would you say would be your must have app or things that you need to have, consider this a daily driver, and which of the OS build that need this?
So there's a couple of things. One is I have gotten myself set in KeePass, and so I can download different versions of KeePass, but none of them seem to play nice with the screen size. So that's been a challenge so far. And another thing that I found is I have my Amazfit Bip, and there's, at first I thought there was absolutely no way there that I can get, you know, that I was going to be able to use it with this, but there's actually an application that'll work with it in Sailfish OS.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was surprised. And I was kind of hoping that Sailfish OS was going to be the big winner because it's got a beautiful UI. I can get that working on it. I'm supposed to be able to get Android apps working with it, but it's supposed to be, I got to find out the app. I have no idea where to get the application called Android apps. I forget what the heck it is. I'll look it up later. But there's supposed to be an application, something that you download that'll make it so that you can run Android some Android applications on Sailfish OS. But I've not been able to find that, so I've been, you know, kind of subject to whatever is available in the Android Software Center. There's two different things. There's like an Android Software Center. I mean, a Sailfish Software Center, and there's the like a Sailfish store, but so it's, I don't know, it's a little confusing, but it's,
is that like the Ubuntu store and then Synaptic?
Yeah, that's basically what it seems like. But there's like both the other thing just seems like it, the one seems like a store, like the Play Store, and the other one seems like more like the Ubuntu store.
What about have you tried any like Wi-Fi messaging app or anything like that?
I haven't tried any Wi-Fi messaging app. Most Fosh desktop environments come with a Matrix app that called Fractal, and Fractal works really nice because with the Matrix app, I've I can connect to Matrix messaging groups as well as IRC messaging groups. There is actually on UbiPorts, there is both there's one called Fluffy Chat that does the same thing as Fractal. There is a MeWe application. There is a Discord application, and
this is on UbiPorts.
So UbiPorts was just because of some of those. UbiPorts was kind of climbing the charts.
Yeah. Do they have like a map application?
They do, and I've noticed though, but with I'm gonna have to look into it, but because I'm finding it on all distros, all map applications are putting me in I live on Cape Cod, which if you look at a map of like Massachusetts or even the United States, it's that little arm that sticks out. That's where I live. Where it keeps on putting me is basically just north of Boston.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know, but it happens on everyone that I've tried has put me basically on the same place.
So weird. Are they using like OpenStreetMap? Is that what they're using? They're not using Google Maps, right?
No, they're definitely not using Google Maps. There are several applications, and I didn't really dig into what they're using, but I've used two or three different applications depending on which which operating system I was using at the time, and but all of them, like each application seems to always put me in the same location that I'm not at. So you have UbiPorts, which seems to have like I said, it has a decent amount of applications that seem to work really well with, I mean, between MeWe, Fluffy Chat, the Discord. I don't think I was able to get, again, with KeePass, it always seems to be, it wants to use like the desktop version where, you know, the whole menu takes up most of the screen. And Unity is a very nice looking, environment as opposed to the Fosh, which is really just clunky looking, but stable. It's stable as all heck. I mean, the most stable operating systems that I've worked with, because both UbiPorts and Sailfish still struggle with Wi-Fi on it, it'll work fine most of the time, and then it'll like crap out, and then it'll just start working again for no apparent reason. I don't know what the problem is, but it's very spotty at times. But both Mobian and Arch Linux ARM for it. I'm not sure whether it was just one of the first operating systems that seemed to just work right out of the box, but that was before I tried Mobian. But I really liked the Arch Linux ARM. It seemed to work really well. So again, Sailfish OS, and Sailfish OS had a leg up just because it's a nice looking UI. I can get some of the applications that I need. Plus, it has the ability to connect to my watch. So that's a start. That's a huge thing right there. And then you have UbiPorts, which has a nice UI and has many applications that that really fit with what I need. So
what are they using for SMS? Is that Fuzzy Chat?
I don't know.
Or did they have their own native app for SMS?
I think it might be their own native app.
It'll be interesting when you get a SIM card in there. I'm kind of interested in how it's going to react.
Yeah, me too.
When you buy it, it's unlocked, right? You don't have to do anything.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's basically like a single board computer with a screen attached to it.
Right, and I guess an LTE modem.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what if I put a SIM card in it, how good of a signal I'm going to get, but I mean, it'd be worth a shot.
It'd be interesting if you use Cheese camera app with like, because I know those Togo pin, you could attach I was looking it up, you can attach like a camera that would be compatible with a Raspberry Pi if Cheese would be that camera module on the pin. Because from what I've read, they're just regular GPIO pin.
Oh yeah?
What I thought was really cool was that the UART connection is in the audio jack. I had never seen that before, but you can use that either for audio or a UART connection.
I was unaware of that.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. There's lots of little ways you could add your own things to it, I guess. So Bosch for now, you think? Most able?
Because UI itself, Unity and Sailfish are very stable, but the problem is, again, both of those two seem to struggle with keeping a Wi-Fi connection. Both of them are very beautiful. I mean, I found on Sailfish OS, they have like little theme type things, and I found one in their store called Mario. It has like the whole background is just Mario's face, and it also comes, the ambience also comes with like coloring themes, and it has like different sound themes for different things, so it'll change like the different notifications or different sounds from the original Mario games, like when he gets a coin, when he dies, just the regular, like the ringtone is just the regular Mario music.
And what happened with your Android phone that is not, what is it, it's not charging correctly?
Yeah,
it's the model
of what, the Android phone?
Yeah,
Moto Z4, I think.
I take it it's a non-user replaceable battery,
right? And it's not the battery that's the problem, it's the charging port that's just really loose.
Does it have Wi-Fi charging or wireless charging?
It does not. It's one of the ones where they wanted to use the Moto mods. Now I can buy for like $150 one of the Moto mods, which gives you wireless charging plus an extra battery, but I at the moment do not want to spend $150 on that.
Might as well get a different phone at that point.
Yeah,
right.
I replaced those ports on several phones. I try not to use mine on my Samsung unless I have to, just because they get loose over time, and I try to use wireless charging as much as possible.
Now what I can do that I've done with other phones in the past is they have those, basically you can add wireless charging to it by adding it's a little thin wireless charging thing that sticks to, it's supposed to go in the back by the battery, but I'm sure I can stick it on the back of the phone, and then the little part that goes into the charging port, and usually that is like big enough where it'll just fit inside of it and be flush up against it, and that might work for wireless charging, and those run about like $15-$20.
Yeah, they're cheap. I have a couple of those. They work. What I would do is on my old phones is I would plug it in there and then put it on the back of the phone and then put the case on the phone and it charges through the case.
Oh, good.
I mean, like a removable case, you know, not actual phone case.
Right. That's basically what I was hoping to do with this one. I have a feeling that's what I'm going to probably have to do with this phone, because I feel like those, at least on my phone I did that with, it seemed to just like in there enough where it didn't wiggle or anything, and I never had any problem charging after that. The one downside being, if you don't have a wireless charger around, it's a giant pain to rip that thing out, and those wires that going into it are really super thin. But yeah, I mean, I really want KDE Neon to get something really, really stable going, because it's a really nice UI. They have, it's, you know, based on Debian, I believe, and it's, I need it to be stable enough to be able to use it. And maybe I just need to find one of the older versions that aren't in the nightly builds, or one of the nightly builds that actually, you know, work well. But yeah, I mean, that, and if I can get figure out how to install Android apps on Sailfish, I'd be super happy with that too. But yeah, that's basically all I got with the PinePhone stuff. I'm having a lot of fun playing with this thing.
Sounds like it. Definitely an interesting device.
Yep. Before we start going into the links, do you want to start talking about all the projects you've been working on?
Oh yeah. Well, Joe said he's got RGB, right, Joe?
Just one right now, and it's really annoying me, because I'm making this macro keypad thing, and I'm following the instructions, and I'm using somebody else's build, and it's simply not working. And I don't know if it's because I have a bad board, they changed the pinout. I tested the soldering. I gapped all the different joins to see if the code was correct. And according to the pins and the pinout, when I gap the correct pins, the correct number comes up. I can get all the numbers to come up. It means all the solder joins are good.
I missed the first part. What device is this?
This is a DIY macro keyboard.
Oh, okay.
And I just have a 12-pin keypad with 7 pinouts, and it's hooked up to an Arduino Pro Micro. And I've got it hooked up. I just verified that all the cables are to the correct locations, but then I have, 4 or 5 keys that are just plain not working. And that's quite a bit of keys not working on a 12-pin keypad. Now, and it's not distinctly any pin, so either I have a bad board or the pinouts changed, but that doesn't make sense considering I can get something on each row and column working.
Now, your follow, is this Sparkline guide that you posted? Is that the one?
Yeah, it's down there at the bottom, and it's exactly what I have, and I can't even solve the other problems on the keypad because I can't isolate what's here. Now, like the 2 and the star sign are inverted, so it's making me think that the pinouts changed, but the 3 is not working at all. The 5 is not working at all.
Are you using a breadboard?
8's not working at all. No, I got it soldered straight to the Pro Micro. The 4's not working at all. The 7's not working at all. The 1 works like it's supposed to. 2 is mixed up. The star. 3's not working. 6 works, but it's outputting 3. 9 works. 8 doesn't. 7 doesn't. Star puts out 2, and number sign puts out nothing. So I'm still trying to figure out their math on how they're getting the different pins to work. So, and what they're sending out to the case statement, to the switch statement. And I'm using their math. It doesn't want to come out right.
I would use a breadboard, man, just to make sure it's not your solder joints.
I already checked. It's not my solder joints. And I don't have a breadboard handy.
Oh, next time I see you, I need to give you one. I got a ton of them.
Okay.
So are you at the give-up phase yet?
I am not at the give-up phase yet. I don't know. I think you met me once or twice. I'm at the I'm stubborn as hell stage.
So you keep working on it until it either works or you just totally break it?
Well, in the end, if I give give up on this particular one, what I will do is I will order like what is it called, a mechanical key tester, and you can solder directly to the back of the keys on those. So that's what I'll do. I'll spend the $10, get one of those pads, do all the soldering myself instead of relying on somebody else's board. Well, except for, you know, the Arduino Pro Micro, I'll have to rely on that and test it that way, because then I know where things are and where they're going.
All these projects, it annoys me because they're always using Windows.
But the whole thing is, you know, if it had been easy and worked the first time, I would have been a whole lot more annoyed.
Why is that?
Because then there wouldn't have been anything for me to work on.
Oh, okay. There's always stuff to work on.
Yeah. Stuff I make up to work on is the stuff to work on. So I hate it when it's too easy.
We're the opposite.
I get much more of a sense of accomplishment when it isn't easy.
I guess if my project list wasn't so long, I would be more inclined to feel that way, but I get much crap.
Yeah, sometimes I like easy projects. Headphones usually come out right.
Well, I decided to do a complete... All right, did you have any more?
No, I'm good.
I decided to do a complete overhaul on my whole network and my servers and all that stuff. And I think we had talked about the last show, trying to use that ASUS DDNS to route traffic from the Atomic Pi through my NetCloud server and all that. And so I started to work on that, but then I was like, I really don't want to close that NetCloud server like that because I'm not familiar with E and all that. And I'd rather run it in a container anyway. So the Atomic Pi is now my reverse proxy, and all I'm running on it is Nginx, and everything that's behind that. So also, the ASUS, the DDNS server, the free DDNS server, get with a router, it does. It doesn't. You have subdomains, so you don't. You only get that one domain name, and then you'd have to enter in the port number for like whatever services you want. I didn't want to do that, so my solution was just to finally set up the Nginx or reverse proxy on the Atomic Pi, and that's all that's going to be used for. And then I bought a domain from Google Domains, and they have really nice options on there as far as their domain package. $12 a year, but you get unlimited subdomains and have quite a few domains and lots of ways for things through your reverse proxy and stuff like that. So that's what I ended up doing as far as that solution went. And then for NetCloud, I planned on upgrading a server for a while, so I went ahead and made sure all my data was backed up and upgraded to Ubuntu 20.04.1. On that, I'm running Focal on my main PC server. That's the Lenovo, and I'm running NetCloud in a container now because I wanted to kind of Dockerize everything. And so I got that running great, and it's running just over HTTP, but the Nginx reverse proxy will be what's in charge of HTTPS on port 443 and enabling all the certificates on the reverse proxy instead of all the servers behind it. So behind the proxy, I have a MotionEye server for my video cameras. That's running on the Raspberry Pi 4. I have NextCloud running on an i5 Lenovo machine. I have Home Assistant, that's running on an Orange Pi. Octoprint running on a Banana Pi. And now I'm trying to set up Jitsi on the Raspberry Pi 4. So all that is behind the Nginx reverse proxy, which is on the Atomic. And that took a while to do to get all that running. The only thing I have left is really to get the Jitsi server running. And that, I went to Micro Center and got another Raspberry Pi 4. And that's what I'm planning on running the Jitsi server on. I had remembered setting it up in Docker, and it ran great. And I was like trying to set it up on Raspberry Pi 4, couldn't figure out why it's not working. I thought for sure I had set it up on a Pi 4 before, and I kept getting these execution errors in Docker. Didn't know what was wrong, so I installed Container to see what was going on. Because in Docker, it would show everything is up and running. And I installed Container on the Raspberry Pi 4 alongside Jitsi. Both of those are running in containers. And watching the Jitsi container through Container, I noticed that it was only running for a few seconds and then restarting, and running for a few seconds, restarting. And so I go to the log, and I was like, what is the problem? I used the same Docker Compose file to get it up and running, create the container, and pull the image. And why is it not running now? And I trace back through the log the execution errors, and I realized that what I had Jitsi running was the Atomic Pi and not the Raspberry Pi. And the Atomic Pi, I remembered, is it's x86, and the Raspberry Pi is not. So I go to the Jitsi Docker page, Docker Hub page, and it's only built for AMD 4. And I spent like all night trying to figure this out, and it was wrong architecture. So getting Jitsi running on a Raspberry Pi 4 is not an easy task. There's some people that have made Docker images for it, and they kind of work, and they fail, and they don't have like correct whatever they use, some of the extensions that Jitsi uses to set up video conferencing. So I don't know if I'm just going to have to pull everything from GitHub and build my own image or what right now. I found a way to do it natively, but it looked like that wasn't running very stable either, mainly because it is not built for ARM. It's mainly built for AMD 4. Getting it running on ARM is a real pain in the butt. So I'm kind of at a crossroads right now. I really want to get Jitsi up and running because I don't like using Zoom, and I'd rather, you know, do video conferences and calls like that on my Jitsi server, because I own it. It's on my server and I'm hosting it. But I don't know if I can ever get that running the way it's supposed to on ARM. But everything else running. And I really like having that reverse proxy. And it's pretty easy to do. You just create files called server block in the Nginx profile, and each file is for a domain or a subdomain. And in the server block, you just tell Nginx to forward, you know, somebody touching this subdomain, it'll forward it to this internal IP address on the port. And so I can have a subdomain for Nextcloud and for MotionEye or for whatever. And it's all going through reverse proxy, which is handling HTTPS, and just goes through there to whatever server it's forwarded. That reverse proxy, and I'm so glad I stumbled on that. It's trying to set all that up with the virtual server file on my Nextcloud server was a pain in the butt, and trying to get the whole A name, Z name, subrect and stuff, and it was just a pain. So that's why I broke down and bought the Google domain. A bunch of years. And the Google domain, I don't have to worry about, you know, them trying to upsell me anything. It's all really straightforward, and I'm pretty sure Google's going to be around for a while, so I don't think I'm going to lose that domain unless I just stop paying for it. They give you a lot of cool things like that. But once I get Jitsi thing figured out, it'll be pretty easy to board through my body and we can all decide. And if I can't, I don't know.
With the Google domain, were you able to choose something, or is it kind of like the My Honky Magoo site that we use for the show notes? So it's honkymagoo.ddns. .net. Are we able to use like a dot, get it like a .com?
Yeah, you can choose, you know, as long as it's not taken by somebody else. So my domain is minic.dev, D-E-V, and all my subdomains will be like cloud.minic.dev and whatever. And .dev was like really deep. That was a $12 one, so I got it. If you want .coms or .org, depends on what you want, and then, you know, your address is going to be is how they price it. Like that. I was looking at .io, but that was like $40 a year. It was $12 a year, and so I didn't get that. They got others too, but they have a million on there to use from, and you just type in what you want, and it'll tell you whether it's taken already, and if it is, they'll give you a whole list of PLDs to use, like .org or whatever, Netos.dev.
Yeah, they're basically a registrar, just like any other sort of registrar you can work with. I think I had one point through them, I'd registered avoidtheinternet.today, and I would only have I had a website that only went live on April 1st that told you to get off the internet.
Yeah, and Google domains itself is, like you said, just a registrar. They don't, not hosting. So now you can host through Google too if you want. That's not what Google domains is. It's just domain and then a DDNS service.
I mean, what you could do if you can't get it running on your Pi, I mean, you could always just try and fire it up on a VPS somewhere and do like a Linode or DigitalOcean droplet or whatever.
Yeah, what I was thinking about doing is, since Nextcloud doesn't take hardly any resources up on my i5 and containerized, I may just run a container of Jitsi on the i5 and then figure out what I'm going to do with this other Raspberry Pi 4. I really wanted to use it. It's going to be too much of a hassle and spend too much time on it. Because basically, they don't develop on it. Every way to install it is kind of packed together, and no telling if it's even going to be that able. I mean, I could boot up my development environment more and, you know, use QEMU and pull down, you know, a multi-arch environment, build the image that way. But that was such a hassle to do it. When I was working with that Almond, that AI server, and that took weeks. I don't really know if I want to this is worth it. We'll build a multi-arch image. I don't know why they don't have one available. I mean, it seems like a Raspberry Pi 4 would be, you know, perfect target, self-hosting and something like that, especially the type of audience they, you know, would advertise to. Seem like they'd want to stray away from Zoom and have something that they can host out. Jitsi is open source, so maybe in the future they will. They'll host an image for ARM, but they haven't yet. Oh, and I was going to talk about what I got at Microsoft too. They have a deal on their SSDs, the Inland brand, which I guess is a Microsoft Center Store brand, and I got a 128 gigabyte Beta 3 SSD for $18.99. Usually $50.
How big?
128 gigabyte for $18.99.
That's not bad.
No, I thought that was pretty good. Then I bought the. I got another. I have one, but I got another external enclosure for the SSD. That was like $9.99. So a total under. I was actually going there to get a Raspberry Pi 4, and I thought, you know, I was like, oh, I can't pass it up. Oh, and Joe, here's a little riddle. I'll give you, and you, I'm sure you know the answer to it, but before you in a little external enclosure and had it hooked up there and involved on it and was booting from it and everything. And,
okay. Is he just cutting out for me?
No.
Oh, can you not hear me?
You get parts of it and then you like cut out.
Am I cutting out for you guys?
You did this last time, but not before then.
Testing one.
Cut out there.
Part of the way through two. You cut out.
Okay, hang on. See what's going on. Okay, now how do I sound?
Good.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey, we got a little bit to 4. Twice. 8.
Okay, so can you hear me now, Joe? Okay.
Yeah.
So I had a little NVMe drive in the external enclosure hooked up to the Raspberry Pi 4, the new one I got. And I booted from it. You know, the new firmware for the EEPROM is in table channel now for Raspberry Pi 4. The boot from USB, you can do that now. But kept getting these inode errors and these bad vectors and things like that. And this was the same NVMe drive that I was using as a backup drive for my laptop. I knew it worked fine, and it was driving me crazy. And I would run FFA on it. And it was okay, but every once in a while, these errors would pop up: bad vector, corrupted vector, and things like that. And it drove me crazy until I found out what it was. That's what it was.
No clue.
Really? You don't know?
No. What was it?
There wasn't enough power going to that drive.
Ah, okay. No external power.
Because I had ran this little drive on my other Raspberry Pi 4, and it ran fine, you know. But for some reason, on this new one, it needed power, and it's a tiny NVMe drive. But what turned me on to it is I touched it, and it was hot, and I was thinking, all right, this thing is pulling a lot of power. And so I hooked it up to a powered hub, and then no problems whatsoever. But if you ever see those errors, like a bad inode or a bad vector or corrupted vector or something like that,
check your power.
Source. Yeah, what it was. By the way, I posted the link to booting a 64-bit Ubuntu server 20.04 on the note on the Raspberry Pi 4. And there's a couple of things you have to do just to enable USB before you actually boot. But it worked really good right now. I haven't had any issues with it in a 4-bit operating.
Cool. And it's working good?
Working great. No issues. Actually, I'm now updating through SSH on the Raspberry Pi 4 and I haven't had any issues. In that link, you have to add them up to the config file, and then there's a couple of scripts you add to boot and add to etd, I think, like that. But once you do that, you plug it in and turn it on. And it, all those ELF and DAT files that you used to have to transfer over, you don't have to do that anymore because that firmware is in the table channel now. And you don't have to clone, you know, the SD card over to the USB drive either. You don't have to do all that either. Like somebody said, it just worked out. Anyway, that's what I've been working on. But if you have a Micro Center, go by, see if they still have that L on those SSDs. I mean, it's their store brand, but I haven't had any problems with it.
Yes, their store brand is iffy.
Yeah, the only thing I bought was our filament from them as far as Inland goes, so I haven't got anything else. I like the filament.
Yeah, yeah, I haven't tried their filament.
Yeah, for me, the filament, as long as you have the right temperature for it, works great. And the stuff I got needs to require slightly higher than the filament I've been using, but we'll just the temperature of the bed and the nozzle, you're fine.
Yeah, and it's the cheapest I've found around, even cheaper than anything on Amazon, whatever. Just straight from Micro Center. Oh, and the process of shopping at Micro Center is, I don't know how it was last time you were up there, Joe, but I guess every other register is open, but the ones in the green are closed now.
You remember last time I went there? I went there to return that power supply, and like the line was like wrapped around the aisles in the store, and that was a big nope for me.
Yeah, I was about to mention that. It went all the way to the back. So I was in line for about 45 minutes. Take note if you plan on going.
Yeah, my Micro Center had something like that. They're actually metering people to, you know, one person in, one person out of the actual building. I was actually going there to get like a mic holder, you know, a microphone holder, and it's like, yeah, no. I turned around, and there was actually, fortunately, a Guitar Center just around the corner. Like they hold microphones there, right? So yeah, I skipped out on that one.
Have y'all had to do the thing where you register on your phone and they text you when you can go in? Because that's what I had.
I haven't tried that one yet.
You just scan a QR code, picture their website, and then put your name and number in, and they'll text you when, I guess, enough will have left, or you can go inside. But as far as projects, pretty much all I had. What about you? For you, any projects?
Yeah, I had a few. Two biggest ones is I started playing with Droid Cam, which is basically the webcam that I have is a 12 years old. It's like a Logitech C270. It still does was 720p, but it is an ancient piece of tech. And I've been wanting to have something a little bit better video on some of the stuff I've been doing. And well, I have a phone, it has a good camera, figured I could try and use that. And Droid Cam is a thing. And if you're not aware, Droid Cam is a mobile app. I think they have it for iPhone as well, but yeah, it works on any Android phone. They have a free version and a pay version. Both of those are closed, but the client is open source and will work in Linux just fine. My biggest issue was trying to customize the resolution that you're looking at it. If you were using the client app on a like any of the other platforms, they have handy dandy little buttons for setting the resolution. In this one, you actually set the resolution by when you load the kernel module to do the loopback device. A little bit hard to find that on their website, even though the website only had like 6 pages on it. A little bit hard to find it, but once I did, I got that running. And hell, even with the free version, not the free version, if you set the resolution on it, you will get it, but it will stretch. So it's default to like 640 by 480, which is fine for like you're doing work calls or that sort of thing. But if you wanted to have like a proper HD, you could actually set the resolution to that, but it would just stretch it. If you get the Droid Cam Pro X or whatever suffix they put on that, it's like a $5 app on the phone, then yeah, you can get HD. They only advertise up to 720p, but you can set your resolution when the kernel module load to 1080p without an issue. So that was one part of fun that I had. The other one
is, did you get it up and running?
Yeah, it works great. I mean, the biggest issues for me were I had to install ADB, which is the Android development stuff, so that you can do like an ADB devices from the command line. That sort of prompts the phone to you have to set. In my phone, I had to set it to, because I have a OnePlus 6, yeah. But that I had to turn on USB debugging, so I had to turn on developer mode so I could have access to USB debugging, so that ADB could talk to it, and then once I got that working, switch it away. When I plug it into a computer, it naturally sets itself up to try and either be file transfer or nothing. You can control it to set it up to be PDP, and once you set that up, run the Droid Cam client locally, and boom, you got a webcam from your phone. You can actually control autofocus right from the client. The phone shows what it will be transferring, so you can also do fun things like locking the exposure or setting the white balance to be locked or automatic, and that's pretty handy. It's actually less handy. I realized it was less handy afterwards, because if you're using it as a camera, and you normally when you're using like a professional video camera or any sort of camera, I like to lock the exposure and the white balance so that if it changes, I would manually change it, and so you don't have that crazy auto iris that happens where things fade in and fade out, and it just looks wonky. And so you can just manually control that. Problem is, if you're using your phone as a camera, that means you're typically going to be in front of it, which means you're not going to be there to actually adjust the exposure manually or adjust the white balance manually. And I made the mistake of doing that and setting a recording and had it locked. And so on the latest episode of my podcast, the video version of it, I start off looking quite okay. And then we were recording during the day, and I have a large window. And I guess after I locked exposure, the sun went behind the clouds, so I got real dark. But now that I've learned from my mistakes, I can handle that.
That's I gotta test out Droid Cam this weekend, because we're supposed to be talking about it on Sunday's Mintcast.
It's a fun tool. I have decided that's going to be the thing. Especially since it's so hard right now to buy a plain old webcam, because it's just hard to do. It's a good fallback. I wish there was something in F-Droid rather than having to go through the Play Store to get it, but at least the client's open source.
You should be able to at least find the APK somewhere.
Yeah, probably. They're just one of those things. It's more about just being able to poke at source and see what's going on under the hood just for fun. In terms of other projects, I've done some, I had a fun little printing adventure for 3D printing goodness, because I've been playing with audio gear and getting stuff like that. I have a set of headphones, but I have no place to hang them. And so I could get one of the things that hang on your desk for headphones. And I went on Thingiverse thinking, I could probably print one out. And I looked at some of them. There are hundreds of them. But they were all very boring to me. And I started looking at some of the files that I had, such as stuff that I've made over the course of time. And I have this 3D sculpt that I had done years ago that was a hand. So just a hand study that I'd sculpted in Blender, and decided that I was going to make that my wall hanging and use that for hanging my headphones. So I printed it out. It's a little over 240 millimeters tall, so it took up pretty much the entire build build volume and height for my on my Ender 3 Pro. And but I got that printed out and then primed it and painted it with some a stone texture paint. And I made the base for it is basically sort of like you've ever seen the invisible shelves where you just have these holes sticking out of the wall that are on a mount and then you just slide the shelf on top of that.
Yeah.
I used that basic idea. I printed out I designed a bit of a mounting base for that sort of connects cleanly to the wrist of the hand. And then put in some screw holes for it so I could screw in some dowel rods, about 10-12 millimeter dowel rods in diameter, and basically put a couple of dowel rod shaped holes in the actual void of the hand itself, and then mounted that to the wall, slid the hand right on there. I used a little bit of masking tape because it was a bit loose, but yeah, it turned out and worked out really well. And now I have the thing up on the mount actually sitting up on Thingiverse if anybody else wants to print one out for themselves.
I'll send the link.
And you posted it on MeWe, right?
Yeah, I posted it on MeWe and basically everywhere else that I had. But yeah, it's on, the link for it is in the show notes now, so it's one of the two Thingiverse things that I've ever put up.
Yeah, I saw it. It's pretty cool. He posted pictures of it. It looks really neat.
Yeah, the only downside for me at least is that while I really like that stone textured spray paint that I put on it, I think it looks better than the black PLA that I was using or the gray primer that I painted over top of it with. It does kill some of the detail in the hand itself, so that's the only sort of downside that I might have approached it differently if I ever do it again.
With the gray primer, it really showed off all the detail.
I will give that a try.
Yeah, be aware it took about, or at least for my print settings that I set it up with, it took about a day and 6 hours to print.
What'd you do? 0.1, 0.2?
0.12 is my layer height.
0.12?
Yeah, I wanted some detail.
Well, considering the size, I might try it at 0.3, especially if I'm planning on painting it.
True, yeah. The biggest thing, the only sort of tricky thing is dealing with trying to figure out where you want to have supports. For me, I was able to get away with only having supports in that void where the dowel rod goes. The fingers actually, like Cura wanted to put supports on the fingers, but I masked that off and it printed just fine without putting supports with the fingers. I got the angles shallow enough that it didn't have to worry about that.
Cool. Yeah. And you printed it standing up, I see.
Yeah. I set it on the bottom and fortunately it didn't fall over, which is, I felt that was a small victory.
And okay, you're on the Ender 3 Pro.
Yeah.
What's the height on the Ender 3 Pro? I think that's the same as the Monoprice Maker Select.
Yeah. I think the height when I looked it up was 250 millimeters. So I basically put it within 10 millimeters of the height.
Yeah. I won't be able to print.
But what you could do is you could print it smaller than that as long as you sort of know what the void is, then you can just have a different size dowel rod. I mean, that's really the only constraint you have there is whatever that dowel rod size is going to be.
Yeah, and you know, can always make the holes bigger.
Yeah, it should be just a boolean operation. So any as long as you load the STL.
I was talking about a drill, but yeah.
I mean, you could do it with a drill. It really depends. At that point, it depends on what your infill is. I only did 7%.
Okay, I've been testing out this keyboard this whole time too, and trying out different things. I'm getting zero output from the keys that don't work, and it doesn't make any sense on which keys don't work, because you'd figure it'd be, if it was a solder job that was the problem, you figure it'd be a single row or a single column that didn't work based on where the pins are, and it's not, and it's really starting to annoy me. And no, I'm not planning on giving up.
Don't give up.
There's always that option.
Not really.
Failure is always an option. It's just not a very fun one.
Yes, failure is an option, but then there's always, you know, going back to the beginning and starting over again. But if nothing else, there's enough keys that at least I can have, you know, 4 or 5 keys for a macro keyboard.
You don't want to do that.
You are correct. I don't.
But yeah, the only other project that I've got besides all of those things are one I haven't started yet. I'm still trying to decide what to do. I need to get away from the Discuss commenting system that was on one of my sites, and trying to figure out an alternative to that. And I'm leaning towards ISO or ISO. I really don't know how it's properly pronounced. And Commento. So is Python based. Both of them you have to run on a server of some sort. ISO is Python based and Commento is Go based. So I'd probably end up making them live on some VPS somewhere to do that. I haven't decided which one. I'll probably go with, I think I'm going to go with ISO, just because if something goes sideways, I'm more comfortable hacking away at Python than I am at Go. Then again, if I need an excuse to learn Go, there we go.
Now, Discus, is that cloud only or can you host it yourself?
Discus is a proprietary system, and they've actually gotten into a lot of trouble in the last couple of years for like URL injection for ads and a lot of like user privacy problems. I mean, the downside is that it's pretty much ubiquitous as a platform for commenting, especially if you have a static site that doesn't do it itself. But it's as bad as, you know, using Twitter or Facebook as your commenting system in terms of privacy.
You want to get away from that, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have a built-in system for it in Hugo, which is what I use for my static sites. But one, it's broken currently in the theme that I've been using for the site that I'm thinking about. But for another, there are too many things wrong with it, and I'm more prone to self-host anyway. So
now the one that you're considering, do you have to sign up for them?
They do. Well, Komento they offer as a service, so you could sign up for it and just let them handle that and go let them handle the server administration part of that. But I figure if I'm going to go through the effort of getting away from, if I'm going to own the comments, I might as well own the comments and the service for that. So
I'm sorry, I meant the people that comment, they have to sign up for an account or anything.
Oh, right. Okay, I got you. So yeah, so I think they both offer the ability to do anonymous commenting. I think Komento has slightly better moderation tools. ISO has more of a, you get an email and you say yes or no to using it. There was another one called Static Man, which is a fun name, which uses GitHub to host the comments. So what you would actually use a continuous integration tool. You have your site on GitHub more or less, and comments would basically be submitted to your site as pull requests, and you approve them or not, which is clever. But I also didn't want to be bound to GitHub as infrastructure, so that's why I didn't want to go there. The other upside for ISO and Komento is that they do allow you to import comments that you had on Discus. So I'd be able to take comments, the few comments that I have from the history of that site, I would be able to move them over on either of those systems. So that's a bonus there. But yeah, it's really about what I want to use for both of them. Have about the same server overhead. They have about the same maintenance overhead as far as I can figure. It's really about what's the easiest to set up, and if something breaks, what's going to be the more difficult one to fix.
I used to host a WordPress site, and I can't remember what I used comment, but that was I hosted that as well. But man, I just, even though it had built-in tools to handle it, I just had never-ending problems. Bam, you know. Even though, you know, I had to approve it before they posted, I got so many comments that I had to just delete. I had a lot of spam. This is like 10 years ago, though, so I'm sure it's come a long way then.
WordPress has, at least. I mean, the Akismet tools and those sort of things. That's gotten a lot better in terms of being able to manage spam and those sort of things. I think ISO would be a more problematic because it doesn't have the moderation tools with it. That's sort of, it's a consideration, but it's a smaller consideration. I don't really have to worry. Well, no, I was gonna say I don't have to worry about that if I get a lot of traffic to my websites on accident. But spammers and bots don't really care about that. You find out.
That's true. Does it have a like a CAPTCHA system?
Not that I could tell. Well, I know ISO doesn't for sure. Look at the Komento documentation real quick and check. They do both support single sign-on mechanisms too. So if you wanted to use whatever OAuth system for that, at the very least, that's also supported.
NetMiner, do you have any project? Or are you still waiting on your final piece on any of those? I really like hearing about what other people are working on. It inspires me.
Right?
Yeah, like I didn't know anything about this. I really want to look into this, the Droid Cam thing. I didn't even know it existed.
So I got one real quick thing. So I had talked about several months ago about giving us a SSL cert and how I used a site called SSL for free that gave us our SSL cert through I forget what the heck it's called. It's getting too late. Either way, SSL for free, joined together with some other company. Long story short, our SSL certs, expired at the end of July. I tried to go through SSL for free to get it renewed. It was a giant pain, and then they didn't wind up sending me the private key for it once I got everything, once I did get everything that they wanted, and I got very frustrated with them, and and I knew there had to be a way for me to do it right with CertBot and what is the program that
Encrypt?
Yes, Let's Encrypt, through Let's Encrypt and CertBot doing it manually. The problem is most of the documentation for that, it almost seems to assume that you know what you're supposed to do.
That's true.
And it's not difficult once you do it. The problem is it's they just kind of throw things at you and expect you to kind of go, yep, that's what you're supposed to do, huh? So I put the, basically all you need to do is install CertBot, which is in most repos. And you can see the little command I put in there. That's all you have to do. Answer some, it'll send you a couple of questions, and then it will stick in a file on your system. Basically, it'll then give you a in your Etsy Let's Encrypt Live, the domain name, it'll give you a full chain key, and then your private key, and then you can just put that into your website. Obviously, you need to have, when you do a manual, when you do an SSL cert this way, it'll ask you to put to make sure that you're you. It will give you this little file that you're supposed to put in a public facing directory in a .well-known folder, and we put that in there, and then you run it, so it does a check to make sure that it's still there. Once it is, it'll give you your keys, and you put your keys into your the SSL section of your website. Like ours is using cPanel, so cPanel will have something called a portion of it called SSL, and that's it. And you have no idea how much time I spent arguing with SSL for free trying to get that to work right. And again, I went through everything with that, and then to have it tell me that it did, well, have it not give me the private key, and then to have nobody get back to me as to why they didn't send me the private key, I finally got this to work right. So once again, we're HTTPS on thenextsubcast.com.
Yay!
Right?
Now you know. Right?
And actually, one really cool thing about Let's Encrypt, if you're running it on there, and actually, Minix, this might be useful to you when you're, if you're setting up stuff with your reverse proxies in Jitsi and with your domain. If you want to have SSL working through that, you can actually, it's smart enough to look at your Nginx or Apache configuration with your vhost and know who you're reverse proxying. So it'll support one that same command that Honky has in the show notes will also, well, except for the -d and the domain, it'll actually look at your config, see the domains that you're talking about or the subdomains that it's looking for, and then ask you if you want to include those as part of the certificate.
Yeah, I did all of my subdomains at the same time. I did the main domain, and Let's Encrypt has an Nginx extension that fills all that in for you. Yep, it was really simple. I mean, I guess once you know what you're doing, there's hardly any hassle.
And that was my thing. I felt like they have it, it seems to be really put together if you have, SSH access to the server itself or access directly to the server itself, and to be able to install Let's Encrypt on the server that's or CertBot on the server that's you're gonna be encrypting, then it all seems to work pretty easily. It was doing the manual mode, so you're encrypting a server that you're not on at that time, just seemed to be a giant confusing pain in the ass.
Yeah, I can see why. You know what got me the first time I used that tool? It's like you were explaining, you have to have that file for internet facing so that they can prove you are you. That's 480, that's ADD. And I didn't even consider that it can't set up HTTPS without having access to HTTP first to find that file. So I had only forwarded 443 and not 80 on the server I had a long time ago, and I just had failing. It could never find that file, and I couldn't figure out why. And then I realized, oh, I'm so stupid. I cannot have HTTPS if I don't have a certificate, and I can't get the certificate until it sees that I am who I am by finding that file. And it's like a circle, you know. So I finally opened port 80 to that server, and boom, it worked. I remember that taking hours. It was such a stupid, simple solution, too. Let's Encrypt is awesome, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does do a lot of automated stuff, like we were saying. It built in the keys automatically on all those subdomains at the same time when I used this new Google domain. And it even knew where the server block files were within Nginx. All that.
And you'll get an email in 3 months telling you have to run it again to renew, which I have a couple of sites where I should really just set up a cron job or something to automate that. that. I just haven't really gotten myself around to doing it.
Yeah, I have to do the same thing. I set up a job for you.
So on a different server, let's say if I wanted to set up the Etherpad for HTTPS, how would I set that up to do a Let's Encrypt for this domain?
To set up HTTPS for Honky Magoo?
Yeah.
You would do this is self-hosted, right?
Yeah, it's running. It's on a Banana Pi run in a Docker container.
You would do the same thing. You would run it just like you did. Use that domain, honkymagoo.dbns.net.
Where would I put the folder though? The file.
So it really depends on how you have it installed. Depending on which distro you're running, sometimes like Let's Encrypt actually you can get right from whatever the software repositories are. But otherwise, you can just you clone that the Let's Encrypt repository from GitHub to wherever you want it to go. And actually, certbot when you run it as sudo, it knows where to put that. And as long as because you have a server configuration, right? You're going to be using Apache or Nginx to do that. And so the web server will need to be restarted once you have it set up, once that's set up there. But it will actually modify your config file for you, like to look for that those certs.
But there's no it's not running Apache or Nginx. It's running so Etherpad runs on its own in a Docker container, and it's so there isn't a web server to put that stuff into. You know what I mean?
But you have to have a web server. It's probably within the container, right? All containerized in one deal. Or does Etherpad have its own web server? There's got to be a web server somewhere.
I think Etherpad might have its own. I don't know the nitty gritty of Etherpad,
what's it written in?
I don't know. Let's look up Etherpad.
90% JavaScript.
So does it have a web server is it running on a web server or is it running its own? I can't find anything.
I'm trying to dig the Docker file right now. Looks like it's running Node.js based built like Node.js just like Python or Go has their own built-in web server that you often just use those for testing. It looks like using a built-in Node.js based one.
Okay, where are you getting your the DDNS, that free domain service?
Yeah.
Or free dynamic domain service?
Yep.
I imagine it would, I mean, I think it would work. I just don't know where it would store your certificate at and what config file it would modify, or if you have to point it at or modify it yourself.
Well, actually, the easiest thing to do would be to set it up as a reverse proxy, and you can configure the actual web server to talk to it. This is a common thing you can do with Nginx, like you've been doing. In fact, I just found something on the wiki. One second. Oh, Node HTTPS. So, now that I think about it, I probably should have put this in the show notes. But
yeah, where I see people are using it, they already have their own web server, and then they're running Etherpad on that.
All right, so I just added the wiki link to the show notes.
Okay, they have one way to do it with a proxy, and then a way to do it with a Node HTTPS server.
Yeah, it's not the best written documentation, but it looks like they give a way to do it for every means of serving it under the sun. So everything from the Node HTTP with a proxy, Apache, Nginx, IIS, wow, Light HTTP, Varnish, and Caddy. So it's not written well, but there's your answer.
Thank you.
Man, this is old, dude. 2012. Oh, this is when it was still called Etherpad Lite.
Yeah, yeah.
But it says no further Apache or Nginx proxy server required. Run it on a native node via SSL. There's a new project. Hunky.
Yay.
Always happy to give other people work to do.
You want to get into any of these links?
Sure.
Hang on, I got too many windows open. What show number is it? I guess I lost that.
154.
Like all the links are Danny's.
Okay. So the first one we have is Pi0 project. It looked pretty cool. Did y'all see that?
Yeah, I've looked at this one and similar ones before. A Pi0 terminal?
Yeah. And I mean, it's nothing really new. They put a little monitor on it or I guess a little LED screen and case. But I like that they have these little programmable buttons too they put on it. You can program to do pretty much whatever you want. I don't know if I would have gone with that big of a screen though on it. Pretty big for a Pi0.
This is probably what the guy had sitting around. It's pretty big for a Pi0 terminal.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know what else you would do with it. 5.5-inch 1080p touchscreen.
With a Bluetooth keyboard, I could use it for writing. That would be what I would be using it for.
Or you could put a desktop on there, easy enough, and, I don't know, watch movies on it or something.
And it's got a little rechargeable battery, 1200 milliamp battery, and a little speaker. I don't. It just seems like a lot of work to do for Pi0. If I was going to do this, I would do it for a beefier board, probably. I mean, if you're going to spend that much money on all the accessories, how much is a Pi0, like in box Wi-Fi?
Yeah, a 15, I think. And it's difficult to yes, it's that price, but shipping from any of the companies that actually sell it.
But there's also if you're from in my case, I would definitely be using something like that for a writing appliance, which is something I've been thinking about for a long time. But the advantage of going with the Pi Zero especially is that not just the small form factor of the actual device, but it also of all the Pis is going to draw the least amount of power. So having it run on a battery, most of that battery is going to go to the screen anyway.
You know, it would be good for something like that, a writing device, especially distracted by, things that you do on your laptop and you just wanted to focus on writing or something like that. I can see it kind of like the way the Amazon, I have one and I can't remember the little e-reader. The Kindle Paperwhite is pretty much super reading and that's about it. So I don't get distracted, looking at the internet or something, looking at guides or something like that. I just read when I'm on it. I can see something like that. Yeah.
I've actually seen projects with the Raspberry Pi and the Kindle Paperwhites and the e-ink displays, using them as a terminal and setting up an SSH into it.
Yep, I actually had one set up like that. It was a bear to maintain though, because you also have to make sure that you basically have to jailbreak and root the Kindle, and then you have to rely on making sure that it doesn't get upgraded, and you keep it in airplane mode all the time. It gets to be a bit of a pain to do that. So there are a few e-ink devices that will work with a conventional HDMI or USB or even the GPIO ports. The problem with using GPIO is that then you have to write your own terminal emulator, and I have no interest in doing that. There was a guy that wrote this was on Hackaday a while back. I forget who shared it with me. It might have been Honky actually. But he actually does have a reasonably working terminal on an e-ink device that he had hooked to a Pi 2 or 3.
Yeah, I ordered a small little e-ink screen, real tiny one for my Litchi Pi Nano. It hooked up I2C connection, and I found a library for the screen too, but I just haven't, that's on the long list project I haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah, that list keeps getting longer.
Now, what would be the advantage of something like this over getting a netbook and just putting straight up Arch on it?
I think this is the build part, is fun part, I guess, to make something like this, more than the utility of it.
I got you.
And it would be considerably smaller than a netbook.
I like the buttons he's added, the physical buttons he's added to it too, that can be programmed.
I didn't see, how big was the screen that he was using with this?
It's a 5-inch 1080p.
Oh, okay.
5.5 inch. The AMOLED, I guess it would just, that's not backlit, right? So their power, just light tools that it needs. Anyway, I thought that was kind of a neat project. Not something that I personally would really be interested in building, but still kind of cool.
I just think you could do a lot more with it than have it as a terminal.
I could see it being like a network monitor too. It would be cool if you just mount somewhere.
Yeah, use X to go with it or something.
Or just run, it doesn't even have to be something that you need to interface with. Just run NetData or Cockhead or something on it, so that you can just view your network health and what's going on. Mm-hmm. The next link, Debian turns 27 in 27 years. Was this anybody's first distro?
Debian-based stuff, that's about it.
I have a great deal of love for Debian, but it definitely wasn't my first distro.
My first distro was Blackware, which turned me off from Linux for a long time.
Oh, that was my second distro.
My first distro was FreeSpire, and that got me started my love for Linux.
I think Debian is what pulled me back into Linux. I think I may have tried a Red Hat CD or something that came on a magazine, but I don't think I tried it for long. You guys remember that? When they used to give you distros on CDs on magazines?
Yeah,
I think I still got some somewhere.
It was Linux format or something like that I used to get all the time. Well, I don't want to say all the time. They were still, when they came out, they were $12, $13 for the magazine and or more. And then you got the disc with it.
Yeah, prices have gotten pretty nuts on magazines.
Yeah, I mean, this was back, probably 11, 12 years ago? Probably 11 years ago when I first started getting into Linux.
Oh, and, magazine prices right now are insane. I don't know about y'all, but I was a kid. I was really into horror movies. And I used to read this magazine called Fangoria. You guys remember that one?
Yep.
I remember hearing about it. I never actually read it.
Me either.
It's been gone for a long time. It just now came back as an actual physical magazine. And I thought about getting one. That thing was $30.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, the prices that you see on just the, any of the Linux-based magazines, you're looking at least $30.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that they usually publish them a lot, like every few months instead of once a month. Now, if you get a Linux magazine or you know, a tech magazine 3 months after it's published, a lot of that's probably going to be out of date already.
And like, Magpie? No, is it Magpie? Is a European magazine, so not only are the prices outrageous, but sometimes it takes a long time to get to you.
Was it Maker that had their own magazine too? I think I used to see them at Micro Center. Maker, something like that.
I'm sure there are some Make magazines out there.
There's a new botnet that attacks the tape servers, Fritzfrog.
Well, that's good and terrifying.
Yeah, what's so hard about isolating it is that it's a peer-to-peer botnet. I mean, a peer-to-peer virus botnet, though. Not centralized anywhere. The main server, control server. I don't know if it says in this article, but what I read, its purpose is mine Monero coin. It's not really trying to get info. It's just using your computer as a zombie to mine coin. What else is here? Oh, I talked about the Ubuntu server. That's worth checking out. You have a Raspberry Pi 4. It's pretty neat running 4-bit Ubuntu server on. I guess that way processes and use more than 1 gigabyte RAM. Internet Explorer is dead.
Hasn't it been dead?
Its death is officially announced. Still going to be kicking around for about a year until they officially really, really make it dead. Kind of like Flash has been kicking around for Flash has been dead, but it's been kicking around for a year until the end of this year when no one's actually going to be doing anything with it.
Hasn't Flash been dead for like 10 years?
Unofficially, yes, but they're putting the nail in the coffin, apparently, at the end of this December.
So it says the browser will be finished August 2021, which just means they're going to end support for it.
Isn't Silverlight supposed to be dead too?
I can't remember the last time I used Microsoft Explorer. Do any of you guys use it like at work or day-to-day or anything like that?
There are a few services that I've seen at work where they have to use IE to connect to an ancient version of SharePoint.
Yeah, there's a couple of things where I got to use Internet Explorer. And then there's a couple of things where it absolutely has to be Chrome.
Yeah, we have everything basically in Chrome, and then our invoice server has to go into Internet Explorer.
So if there's an older version of Edge that does not use Chromium, it will be phased out on March 9, 2021.
That thing just needs to die a horrible death.
Right. A long time ago.
Because there were so many things that just didn't even work on Edge. So if websites didn't work on Edge, then what the hell was the point of it? You had IE that worked, and then you create this whole other thing that just did not work with some things.
Yeah, that's right. Remember, Edge came out. They were pushing you towards Edge from Internet Explorer, and then at the bottom of Windows, you would have an Edge icon and an Internet Explorer icon. It was so awkward.
Yeah, I set up my mother-in-law's laptop, and I set up Edge on it, and then I went to some site that she needed to go to, and the second I went to the site, it said, "We cannot open this in Edge. You need to download Internet Explorer." What the hell is the point?
Microsoft. I have fond memories of Internet Explorer, though, a long time ago.
Netscape Navigator.
I was about to say that. Netscape Navigator, too.
Yeah, I have zero fond memories of Internet Explorer. Not a single one.
I can say the same. Like, I said Netscape Navigator.
That was my first time on the Internet, Internet Explorer, I believe.
And mine was Netscape Navigator.
Yep, pretty sure that was mine.
I think I toyed with Mosaic for about half a second because I knew it existed, but then it was over to Navigator.
So the only major browser that's not using Chromium now is Firefox, right?
Unless you're talking about Firefox on Android, where it is basically using WebKit, right?
No, I didn't even think about mobile.
There's another one that's not built on it either, isn't there?
Well, is Opera still kicking around?
That's what I was thinking of, Opera.
Chromium is now the basis of Opera, too.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to this thing called the basket. Notice all of the eggs.
Yeah, that's kind of worrying. I didn't realize that it was that injected itself into that many browsers.
I'll bounce over to Chromium on occasion, but I'm still primarily a Firefox person.
I'm Firefox, or I die. Or they're actually having problems. I was going to post that link, too, about Mozilla, and I forgot. You know, they laid off so many people, and they're looking for new revenue streams now. Why they're coming out with their own VPN service like that.
What's Safari built on?
WebKit.
Chromium.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, if I recall, Safari was one of the first things to start using WebKit after, what was it? It was not Conqueror. What's the first KDE browser? That's where WebKit was born. I used to pay attention to this stuff.
Can't remember either.
I may have literally been KHTML. I'm almost positive that's what it is now. KHTML was what sort of encapsulated WebKit. That became Conqueror, I think. And then Safari started using WebKit, and I think Apple did this giant code dump that to the code the WebKit developers, and what are we going to do with all this? It's a giant chunk of code that nobody's vetted. That was Apple's means of giving back, was just this giant sort of unmetered code dump of, we just made some stuff here. Have fun.
You said, yeah, we're contributing upstream. See?
Of course, I could have totally boxed the history on that. So I welcome anybody listening to correct me. Figure if I say it assertive enough, somebody will correct me.
If you say it like you know what you're talking about, people will believe it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm really trying to pull the well actuallys out of the woodwork.
Well, actually, Apple sucks.
Well played.
Last one I have is an easy way to install Docker Compose on ARM64. Messed around with 64-bit OSs on ARM, and Docker Compose was always difficult to get running. And I found a pretty cool solution from the Linux server hub on Docker, which is a Docker image for Docker Compose. It works great. When I was trying to get it running on Armbian, on the Banana Pi and on the Orange Pi, I had to do a lot of stuff. I had to actually recompile the overlay and to turn off switches within the DTS thing. And this way, it runs in its own container. And it doesn't. What's weird is when you run a Docker Compose command, like Docker Compose version or Docker Compose up, is that when it starts the container. So it's not always running. Kind of strange. Netminer, you still there? See, we have a new visitor, CD Tech Guy. Thanks for joining us. Oh, Joe, did your HE, is that what it is? That little tablet you got? Did you ever get figured out what was wrong with it?
You're going to have to be a bit more specific than that.
Remember last time you were using it and it kept crashing?
Vaguely. I don't think it's the dock. I was also experiencing overheating with the Dell Venue 11 Pro 7130 and the 7140. But I think there's actually a problem with the power strip that I was using not providing enough power. Because even when I switched to an alternate, not using the dock, but using the charger, it really wasn't charging quickly. And then when I brought the dock inside and had it hooked up in there, it's working just fine. So I don't know if I'm just putting too much power through one strip or what.
It was a power issue again.
Yep. Just not cranking out the voltage.
Oh, I did get one thing in the mail, or several things. It was these little LED amp meters that you can connect to power supplies or whatever you want. It tells you how many amp, how many volts.
I am interested in those.
Yeah, I bought 10 of them. So I think it was like, I may have paid a little more than $10, maybe $11 or $12. You know. But I remember when we were talking about one project where the guy made the power supply out of a
yep.
computer PSU. Yeah, that's what I was going to use it for.
Made a bench power supply out of a PC power supply.
Yeah, and he had an ammeter for 3.3 volt, 5 volt, 12 volt.
Yeah, when you're done with that, you're going to have to tell me how it all went.
It's on the list. What I'd like to do, what I was thinking about doing, is taking all those little fingerboard computers that got out of the cases and moving them to mounting them on a clear piece of acrylic or something, and then, you know, on little standoffs, and then put another piece over it, and then just run all those off a power supply of having all these boards coming everywhere. And on the piece of acrylic above it, put like a big 12 volt fan or something, just blow over the top of it.
My middle child is enjoying that computer that you gave me.
Oh, she got it up and running. What is she running on it?
Windows. She has to run Windows for school.
Oh, okay. Is it working okay?
Yeah, it's working pretty good. I mean, you know, I knew it wasn't going to be the fastest thing on the planet, but for a first computer, it's pretty darn good.
I'm glad. Glad it worked out.
I might have to either replace the graphics card or find a shield for that one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That GPU is working okay.
As long as the computer doesn't get shaken around too much.
Yeah, the only thing that's holding it up is the PCIe slot, right?
The PCIe slot, and then it's got the case that I put it all in. I didn't leave it in the test bench case that you had. Has this little like plastic piece that drops down on, and it kind of barely fits the card. There's a slot for the card in it, and it fits in that.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't have that metal piece that goes to the back. Most cases do, where you put the screw in and it holds it steady right there.
Yeah, you can also put the screw in, but that is what's meant to hold it in place. So it doesn't need the screw. I think a screw would get in the way from it closing, but you can still put one in.
Is she using Windows for like Zoom and stuff? Cool.
Yep, and I've tried putting Linux on the kids' computers before, and then I have to argue every step of the way with the teachers about what the computer can and can't do.
They call you a hacker.
I don't care what they call me.
I usually get troublemaker.
At a certain point, I get much more choice words.
How are your kids doing?
My kids are good. I mean, they're tired of being stuck at home, but they understand the reason why.
Has school started for them yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, are they going to school or are they just doing remote?
They're doing remote. I mean, because of my middle child's health issues, going to school is not a viable option for any of them.
Now, are they offering like basically a full course through remote, or is it kind of like hackery?
Yes. No, it's a full everything through remote right now. I mean, the school district that they're at, the first 3 weeks of school, everybody is going to be remote, and then they're going to do some jiggery pokery to get people in the classroom. But I kind of expect it to get extended out, considering what's happened in Georgia and what's happened in some of the school districts around here, where schools opened up and like second day they found out they had X number of cases and X number of people exposed. Because if you have one case in a school, you got to figure at least 30 other people are going to be exposed at minimum.
Well, it also depends on like, so look at the way we were talking earlier about I was talking about how our school district for my the second grade, for my 8-year-old, and they have it set up so like all of the chairs are 6 feet apart. They basically have the classroom, so there's only like 8 kids per classroom, and because of that they've had to use up all the rooms and stuff. So there's no, like, again, you're talking about a second grader who isn't wandering in the halls with all the other kids like a high school or something. They're basically going to their desk, and they're basically spending most of their time at that desk. They want to do like some outdoor learning type stuff where they're outside and doing stuff, you know. But it's they're at their they're eating their lunch at their desk. They're basically at that desk, from what I can tell.
Right. And for second grade, that's cool. And you exactly. can put people 6 feet apart. And I guess if the schools around here were more willing to have the teachers walk from classroom to classroom, and then have the students only in one classroom, and then have the desk 6 feet apart, which is unfeasible considering the number of students, then that could work in some instances. But I still wouldn't send my kids, because my middle child has health issues.
Right. And that makes perfect sense.
But in most schools, it doesn't seem like you can convince the teachers to be the ones to move around.
Really?
Yes, really.
Wow.
And then, you know, doesn't really work for some of your art classes. And then all the kids are taking different classes. It's not like all the kids have all the same classes together. So, yeah.
Right. I see, that idea works really well for kids like in second grade. But once you start getting into the higher grades, and actually the higher grades around here are, by the sounds of it, basically 90% remote learning. Like, I believe the high school program around here is like 4 days a week remote learning, 1 day in school, or something along those lines.
There was large pushes from the government for everybody to be forced to attend school, and well, no.
Right. I think again, going back to the second grader is, I feel she is really missing being able to see other people. It's not like she's has social media or a phone or other ways to try to keep in contact with all of her friends. She's 8. Well, almost 8. That's not happening. You know, there's no other way that she can socialize with anybody besides us.
So but it is also difficult to keep second graders 6 feet apart from each other.
Yeah, and it's going to be...
I guarantee in a class of 10, at least probably 3 of the students there will have parents that think masks are a joke and their kid won't wear one.
Well, you have to be in the school. And it's not like going into a store where you feel like you can just be a pompous person and say no. If you're going into the school, you have to wear it.
No, it pisses me off when schools say that, oh, we can't enforce a mask rule. There's no way feasible to do that. But you can enforce a spaghetti strap rule.
Right. To the best of my knowledge, the school where my kids are going to, it's sort of a rule of if you're in the building, you have to wear it. And during there are times that you're supposed to wear it, you have to wear it. They're going to give break times where kids can take their masks off. But even my 4-5-year-old who's going to be going into a preschool is going to have to be wearing a mask pretty much all the time. And they're going to enforce that as best as they can. The hard part with it is the 4-5-year-old wearing a mask all the time is going to be interesting. The preschool age kids are going to be interesting, but it's all going to be interesting at this point. I don't know how, you know, what's going to happen with all of this, how it's going to change things, and Yeah.
Well, if you notice how the college kids are just blowing up when they get into dorms or what have you, they're just blowing away all the safety rules.
I think most colleges are just going straight remote.
Yeah, they're not opening up the dorms.
Yeah. Problem is mostly the people, there's like high schools where, you know, that's run by the local government, who's half the time they're a bunch of arrogant morons. So, you know, either they're really concerned with things or they have their own agendas.
I have seen a lot of people say that it's still a hoax and that the death rate is significantly less than when it was with, what was it, bird flu, what, 10 years? Not even 10 years ago? 8 years ago? H1N1?
Was bird flu before or after swine flu?
I'm not sure, but they're saying that, you know, the death rate is much lower and that the infection rate is much lower. And so why are we reacting this way when we hardly did anything for swine flu or bird flu?
Because neither one of those things made it into the U.S. Neither one of those things were a nationwide pandemic. But again, I'm preaching to people who obviously understand what this is. So,
sorry, the one you have to look at is the Spanish flu.
Is that the 1918?
That's the one.
Well, I know Italy had a very high death rate for a while there, according to the news, but I'd have to look up the actual numbers for myself. But why chance it? What does it really hurt to wear a mask?
And that's the biggest thing that I find annoying, is most people who are wearing a mask aren't doing it. Like, I wear it for 8 hours a day. Most people who have to wear a mask only have to wear it for the amount of time they spend going into a store or whatever, and they want to... seriously want to bitch and moan about it. All right, I got to do this thing all the time.
Then find another store.
You know, you have to wear it just when you're out and about into like a store or something like that. Suck it up. It's not that big of a deal.
They can tell you you have to wear a shirt when you come in the store. They can tell you that you have to wear a mask.
No shirt, no shoes, no mask, no service. Get out.
Yep, give me a break. Also, if I'm out on my own, 30 feet from everybody, I treat it like a convertible top. I put it down when I need to, and I put it up when I...
Oh, that reminds me. You need to check out Ben Heck. He has two different automatic mask builds, so that all he has to do is hit a button for it to pop down and hit that button again to pop it back up. And the second one seems a lot smoother than the first one.
I was about to ask, have y'all seen any cool masks?
I have seen
many. I got one with Godzilla.
I have seen many. I've seen many of them, like, when I first started looking on, like, Thingiverse and stuff like that. I've seen some interesting ones every day coming into work.
The ones that creep me out are the ones where people get their own face printed on the mask.
Yeah.
That's just weird.
Oh, even the ones, I have some people who work with me who have the masks that have, like, that clear plastic shield so you can actually see their mouth. That's after all day long of not seeing anybody's face, and all of a sudden there's like this clear plastic and you can actually see their mouths. It's just weird.
Well, my wife got me a couple of interesting ones. So I do have a couple of Deadpool ones, a couple of Iron Man, Godzilla, Spider-Man, Wolverine. And yeah, I think that's it. And then work sent me 5 plain white ones. And then I have like 5 plain black ones so that I can cycle through and not worry about cross-contamination and wash them as needed.
Yeah, I'm still using the Montana mask.
It's a real off-putting one that I saw there. It's similar to the ones where you get your own face printed on there. Except it was the part of the face not covered by the mask, just above the mask, and then turned upside down. If you can imagine that. It was weird looking. It was like, it freaked me out at first. I couldn't figure out what was going on.
I got a guy who I work with who has like the classic horror figures. Like it was like a little collage. It had like Jason Voorhees on it. It had the Pinhead from the Hellraiser movies and a couple of other guys. That one was interesting. I saw one that was all red and then said 2020 sucks on it. I saw one I think I've seen at least twice one that says if you can read this then you're too damn close.
I wonder if they make just like in colored one where it looks like you don't even have a mouth. You guys remember that old Twilight Zone movie where the kid that could whatever he imagined came true and he told his sister to shut up or something and all of a sudden she didn't have a mouth?
Yep, I remember that. Didn't they use that story for the Twilight Zone movie?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, the movie.
Yep.
That always scared me.
And they kind of repeated the same theme with Star Trek.
Yes. I remember that.
What, the next generation, I think, with the kid that never really been exposed to other people, but the aliens gave him, like, superpowers.
I don't remember that one. It was Next Generation?
Yeah, I'm thinking it was TNG.
On the original one, they had that kid that had...
Maybe it was the original one.
Yeah, he was, like, his family was, or his parents were, like, gods or something, and but she didn't know that he was a kid until they turned beard, and they weren't really gods. They were, like, super powerful aliens, and he turned out to be a big brat.
No, that was a different one. The one I'm talking about, they found a kid that had basically his parents' ship had crash landed on what everyone thought was a deserted planet, and then these aliens found him, kept him alive, and basically gave him superpowers so that whatever he wished for came to be. And then he tried to, you know, interact with people, and because he had zero social skills, and whenever he didn't get his way, he started, you know, trying to wish his way out of it.
Oh, I don't remember that one. I have to go back and get out. Remember that there was one really good one about the old man that lived on the, what looked to be like a planet that was back in time or whatever, and Carr kind of corners him, and they realize that he's really super powerful alien, and all the people that were on the planet with him, he had kind of brought them in existence with his mind. Remember that?
I remember a couple of times in the original series where they went to planets that were similarly evolved but further in the past, and then a couple of times I think they went through that gateway, or at least once they went through that gateway back into time. And,
oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
City, or the, something like City on the Edge of the World, or I forgot what the name of that episode.
Yeah,
that
the Infinity Gate, or whatever the heck it was.
Well, that Next Generation episode, they found that he just looked like an old man, and then they got him aboard the ship, and they realized that he was like one of the most powerful beings in the universe, and his world had been attacked by some alien race, and he killed his house, and so he just snapped his fingers, basically like, what's his face from
like
Marvel movie, and the whole race here. Yeah, it was a good episode, like Thanos, he just snapped his fingers.
Like Q?
Yeah, I like the Q episode too. Those are good.
Yeah, there weren't many of them, but hey, the first episode's a Q episode.
And I like that one where, I think it was Next Gen, when they were trying to get him and his wife back together or something like that. Or maybe it was Voyager. I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
Have y'all watched Discovery or Picard or any of those?
Picard's on my list, but I haven't watched it yet. And I understand they're losing a showrunner or something, and it's kind of up in the air on whether it's coming back or not.
I enjoyed that first season.
I like Q's idea of sex. They took a couple of fingers. I mean, talk about G-rated.
Yeah, that's all he had to do. I remember he got in trouble, and they took powers away from him, too.
And then that girl that ended up being, like, the child of a Q and a human or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, the blonde girl, and she ended up with, like, infinite power.
You know, the guy that played Q, ever since I saw that him on there, I recognize him in all kinds of movies. B-movies, mainly, or old sci-fi shows, and stuff pop up, and like, oh, that's Q.
Or Geordi LaForge. You don't see him in much, but when you do, it's like, yeah, I know that guy. I've been watching him since I was a little kid.
Yeah, that Reading Rainbow was my jam back in the day.
Yep.
And I see Barkley a lot. Barkley in different shows and movies.
Who played Barkley?
Wasn't that Murdoch in the 80s? His name is Dwight Schultz.
Speaking of A-Team, and yes, this will get to it in just a second. Did any of you guys watch Old Guard?
I haven't seen it yet. I think Hong Kong saw it.
Yeah, I saw it.
Did it or did it not seem like right there at the end they were trying to open it up so that they could make an immortal A-Team?
Yes.
Now, is that a movie or a series?
It's a movie.
Yeah, I remember hearing an interview about the A-Team cast, and they talked about this guy being, you know, handsome but so-so actors, and then they had their leader and Schultz as real, honest-to-goodness, you know, A number one actors all the way.
Yeah, that was what, George Peppard?
Yeah, George Peppard. Well, just like the Wild Wild West, you had James West, which was a stunt person, and then Artie was, you know, played all kinds of roles.
Honky, go ahead, Joe.
Did you hear that Leverage is coming back?
Is it really?
Yep, without one of the actors, because there was some controversy around him or something, and then they're bringing in Noah Wiley to replace him, like, in some fashion. But basically makes it the librarians. It's like half the actors from Leverage went over to librarians.
Was that show good?
It was decent. I enjoyed it.
Which one, Librarians or Leverage?
Both.
I did not care for Leverage at all.
Really?
I never got a chance to really watch Librarians, but Leverage just seemed like... I don't know. It seemed very repetitive. You know what I mean?
Very serialized. Very okay. Here's the con type of thing. And right. Yes, feature of the week, creature of the week type thing.
See, I'm not against creature of the week type things if there's a underlining story as well. That's kind
there
of
there is.
Okay, maybe it's just I didn't watch enough to get the underlining story.
I need to watch this. I never even heard of it. I love creatures of the week shows.
Well, it's not really a creature of the week. It's more a con of the week.
Right.
It's not a sci-fi show?
No.
The Librarians is a sci-fi show. Leverage is not a sci-fi show, but Will Wheaton does guest star.
Librarians, I wanted to watch too. That was on the Sci-Fi Network, right?
I think so. Yeah, maybe, probably.
No, Librarians was a USA or TNT?
ABC?
No.
Oh yeah, I think it was one of the major networks, CBS or something.
Librarians?
Yeah.
But you gotta start out watching the first three movies, The Librarian.
Really? They have movies?
Yeah. Noah Wiley started out making the movies, and then he did the first episode of the first season of the TV show, and then he came back like once or twice in first season and second season, and then like third season he was a star again.
TNT, because it was the same station that did
Mr. Robot.
I think so. Yeah, no, USA did Mr. Robot, but Noah Wiley did the that show where aliens basically
aliens
took over the Earth.
Yeah. Oh, what was it called?
That was a great show, though.
No, it really wasn't.
Really? I really dug it.
Was it that dome? Oh,
sky no. Something.
Yeah.
What did you say, Fleet?
It had the word sky in it. Give me a second.
Falling Skies.
There we go.
Have you seen that show called, I think it's called Magicians or The Magician?
Yep.
Is that any good? That was on the Sci-Fi Network, right?
So, it was on the Sci-Fi Network. So, the first season of The Magicians is, you kind of have to suffer through because I don't know how I made it through it. Because by the end of the first season, I still hated pretty much all the characters. But I pushed on to the next season, and I started actually liking the characters in the show.
How many seasons are there?
I want to say four.
What is the premise?
There's magic in the world, and somebody who didn't know about magic is learning about this whole world of magic in the regular world. Plus, they also get they can move between worlds into this world that was a mystical fantasy world that some guy wrote a lot of books about, and the main character used to read about the books. And so, like, this mystical fantasy world is also real alongside our world, and yeah.
I've heard it described as university level Harry Potter plus portal fantasy.
That's what I thought it was, like some kind of magic academy or something, but it's not that. Oh, it is that?
Well, it's kind of that. It starts off as that because they're initially going into a magic academy school for college level, you know, people. But at the same time, it then by like later on, they're technically at the school grounds, but they just kind of use that as a place where they go to meet and hang out and talk and stuff. And they're not like going to classes anymore. The classes aren't really part of it. They're still like the head dean is part of things, but they're never like after season one. I don't think they go to class anymore.
That seems about right.
Right.
That's when it gets good, right? Season two.
Well, that's when I at least enjoy the start liking the characters.
Did you ever read the books?
Nope.
Don't.
Didn't you? Because I think you
don't read the books.
Yeah, I've had like two or three false starts on the show. I haven't been able to get myself through it.
Is it like a young adult book, like Harry Potter?
Yes, ish. What I can remember of it. It was pretty terrible, like all the books in the series.
I've never read a Harry Potter book, and I've never seen a Harry Potter movie.
I did. I read most of the Harry Potter series while I was in Iraq.
Did you like the movie? Did you watch the movies?
I liked most of the movies until you got to about where I started disliking the books, which was Half-Blood Prince.
My girlfriend is trying to get me to watch the movie, but I didn't know if it was just kid stuff or be entertaining for adults too.
Give it a shot.
Because we were going to go to the drive-in playing the Harry Potter, one of the Harry Potter movies, because they don't have any new movies out right now. Nobody's releasing new movies. It was funny. I was reading like a month ago or something. I was reading what the top movies out in theaters were in the country, and it was the Independent Film Channel had a horror movie out that made like $60,000, and that was the top theatrical release in the country, and that was only shown at drive-in. I never thought I'd see a $1,000 movie from Independent Film Channel be the number one theatrical release. And she's a weird time.
Yeah. Well, the theatrical releases aren't making a whole lot right now.
Yeah, everything's pushed back. I saw that trailer for that Tenet movie. Is that the new Nolan movie? It looked interesting.
I'm kind of surprised by that, though, because there's some like kids shows or kids movies that they wound up releasing to either streaming or basically streaming or to purchase through streaming versions, and those have had to have made some money because it's not like there's any new content out there.
Oh, this was movies only shown in theaters, so, and they counted the drive-in theaters. Yeah,
well, that's the only one that's open. So I tell you, I really enjoyed the fact that for kids movies that I didn't have to pay to go to a movie theater to watch some of these movies.
Well, what have you seen lately, kids movies wise?
What, for newer stuff?
Yeah.
So a while back, the Trolls, the new Trolls movie came out, and with that one, we wound up getting it through renting it through Redbox. But then the Scoob, the new Scooby-Doo movie came out, and it was available on Amazon, and it was like $20 to rent it or like $24 to buy it. So we just wound up buying it.
I've heard that one's actually not that bad.
Yeah, the Scooby-Doo movie wasn't that bad.
Scoob. Yeah, I'm gonna end up having to watch that sooner or later.
Have you been watching movies with your kid,
though? Well, usually the movie's on. I'm in the room.
Now's the time to introduce them to the classics.
Have you done Frozen?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And Frozen 2.
Well, that's what I was thinking. The Frozen Mark 2. How is Frozen Mark 2?
Not as good as Frozen Mark 1.
Yeah, well, that's a given.
we end up rewatching things like Strange Magic.
What is that?
Yeah.
Oh, you should check that out.
What was that last hour movie that was about? I just saw the cover. It was like a blue man or something.
Onward.
Oh, yeah. The good thing about Onward.
Onward, yeah.
Onward went straight to Disney Plus as opposed to going into the theaters. And that was actually pretty good. I was surprised. I didn't think much of just seeing the ads. I didn't think too much of it.
Yeah, it's on my list of things to get through. But we're working our way through Avatar at the moment. I'm having a good time with that.
Working our way through it?
Yeah, from all the way from the beginning, first episode. All the way through. Yeah.
Oh!
Sorry, yeah, the animated series, not the movie that uses papyrus as a font.
Not the James Cameron joint.
Right. I thought you meant working through it because it was like a 3-hour movie. They kind of watch it in installments.
I really enjoyed that Avatar series.
It's a phenomenal animated series. Actually, not even like just taking the animation part out of it. It's just a really good set of storytelling.
Yeah, the story itself is awesome. Now, wasn't that crazy about the Korra one that came after that? I guess because I had been spoiled because Avatar was so good. It was okay. Yeah. Have y'all watched that Joe and Honky Avatar: The Last Airbender?
No,
of course.
It's great. It's really good, Honky.
Did you watch Korra?
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. Korra was okay. I mean, it was still good, but Avatar was so good that it's hard to back up that.
Did you hear about all the fun with Netflix's live action version and the writers?
Well, I heard they were working on a live action version. But that's
they
all
were,
heard.
But the original writers have left Netflix because Netflix wanted to do something a little bit more grown up with the original story still, you know, the Aang and all of them, and they wanted more sex and violence, essentially.
Oh, with like them as adults or as kids?
I would say probably teenagers.
Yeah, it sounds like Netflix.
Late teenagers.
I mean, Avatar was great because, I mean, like the whole family could watch it and everybody could get something out of it, you know, adult, kid, whatever. Now, that doesn't count for the live action movie because I don't know what the hell is going on with that.
That crap burger. They couldn't even get the names right. And then, you know, it took 16 earthbenders to move one rock, tiny rock.
I wonder if that's what killed his career in Night Shyamalan. Well, boys, I think we're going to lay down.
Yeah, it's about that time.
Yep. All right. Where'd I put the show notes? All right. Our next recording date will be September 4th, 2020. Our music is Downright, provided by Cloud 2 and Brome. I'd like to thank Dylan for the use of our mumble server. Finally, we'd like to give a special thanks to Father Finch, Weeb, Dave Morris, Tony Bemis for all their help and support over the years. I've been your host for this evening, Honky Magoo. With us tonight has been Weep.
Have a good one.
Joe.
Good night.
Minix.
Have a great weekend.
And Netminer.
Good night, gentle folk.
Good night, all. Evening, Danny.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm not bad. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You got a lot to talk about, mainly my own project.
It's odd we beat Netminer in here.
He's usually first.
Yep.
Hopefully he's awake. You working this weekend or you got anything planned?
Oh, I work 6 days a week. No plans.
How's the situation up there?
About the same.
Our numbers are starting to go down, at least my county, of new cases.
I think ours have gone down a lot too. But I mean, even though our numbers are down, it hasn't really, I mean, restaurants are opening kind of, you know, stores are opening kind of, schools. Schools should be interesting because, September, both of my kids will be going into school. My son will be going into a preschool and my daughter will be going into, second grade. So just, the other day they had the principal had a Zoom meeting for all the parents on, what the new school year is going to look like. And, so at least here in this school district, they offer both remote learning and classroom learning. And I think that's going to be good for a lot of people who still don't feel comfortable with the idea of classroom learning, that they're going to have an actual teacher, they have teachers set aside just for remote learning, and they're going to give all of the kids iPads, which, you know, personally, I'd be happier if it was a Chromebook, because number one, I like the idea of them having an actual keyboard. Number two, I'm not an Apple product, so my own personal bias there.
Test.
Hey, Joe.
I can hear you.
But some of the ideas of like the classrooms should be interesting because you have classroom sizes are going to be cut down to like 8 kids. And because they have to cut down the classroom sizes, they're basically using the entire school. So, you know, like part of the gym, what was formerly an art class will be somebody's classroom, you know, where they used to have the computers, parts of the library, these people's classrooms, but they'll have all of the desks set up. So they're all, you know, 6 feet apart. So great deal of amount of space around them. They're all going to be eating at their desk because, I mean, if you're gonna do this 6 feet apart, you can't. It'd be harder to do that when they're at lunch tables as opposed to right at their desk where they're already, you know, separated. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, I saw pictures of a kid going to school in Georgia in the hallways, and they're packed in there like sardines.
Yeah, those were like high schools. So the high school around here, I believe, is they're doing like, I want to say that they're doing 1 day in the classrooms, and then like the rest of them are going to be remote or something along those lines. I know the tech schools up here are doing like some weeks on, some weeks off remote, and they're going to fluctuate back and forth to keep the number of kids in the buildings down, so they won't have packed hallways.
Hey, Nat.
He's here. Oh, Joe, I meant to get back to you on that show, but I got so involved in the whole networking. I'll talk about it on the show. But you're setting up my new network behind the reverse proxy, and I got a new ARP Raspberry Pi 4 and some other stuff, some other goodies from MicroVenor.
Cool. I tried out a project today that I do want to talk about. Plus, I have done a whole lot of watching of Netflix, so I want to discuss some of the shows.
All right, let's jump right into that.
Yeah.
I burned through season 1 and season 2 of Umbrella Academy. Really enjoyed it.
It's a fun show, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you think of really season good. 2? I haven't watched it yet. I like season 1 a lot.
It's a lot like season 1. I mean, it's the same all over again. Gotta prevent Armageddon, except now it's in the 60s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then The Old Guard. I watched that. That was good.
That was a good movie.
What was that other one? Something Power?
Yeah, that new one that just came out.
Yeah, the one where they take the pill and get superpowers for 5 minutes.
How was that?
Really good.
Good.
I mean, it's right up there with that Will Smith one that they did.
Bright.
I loved Bright.
Bright was good.
And I do like this new one that they did. God, what was the name of it? Now I gotta find it.
Is it a Netflix original?
Yeah.
Was it the one where people were born with powers and the
it's Project Power, and they take a pill. Jamie Foxx, and they take a pill, and for 5 minutes they have powers, it kills them.
Does they can take different pills for different powers, or what?
No, you take the one pill, and your power is whatever it turns out to be. But it's the same thing every time you take the pill.
Oh, okay.
That's but you don't know what it's going to be until you take that pill, and it might kill you.
I saw the ads for that. I've been meaning to watch it. Probably watch it soon. I'm about ready to finish off Wynonna Earp season 3.
And I did. I've watched Winona Earp up to the most recent. I've watched, I don't know if I've got the new episode for Doom Patrol yet. I finished up Stargirl. The Pretender came out when seasons were like 24 episodes, so I'm a good chunk of the way into the first season on that. And wow, this is some tasty whiskey. I usually don't drink on the show, but I'm making an exception today.
Right? What type of whiskey is it?
This is Ellington Reserve Salted Caramel. My wife got it for me, and it is delicious. And I got this little tiny bottle of it, but I got a big old bottle of Black Velvet Caramel. But this salted caramel is wow.
Ellington?
Ellington Reserve.
I'm a sucker for those flavored bourbons and whiskeys.
Yeah, well, I usually go with the honeys or, well, caramels, and we went caramel this time, and it is delicious.
I like the Maple Crown Royal. Really good. I'll have to try the caramel. I've never tried caramel.
We'll be calling you 5250, you know.
I don't think I'm in quite that league of drinking.
Well, hey, we could use another good friend like that.
Absolutely. I keep hearing his podcast when it comes out on Hacker Public Radio, the Brevue one.
Yeah, the HBR Book Club.
Yeah, it trips me out every time I listen to one of them.
Yeah.
How do I sound?
Good.
Sound good?
Sound good.
Hey,
I had to reset some things because in upgrading this user, I got some stuff got brought over from Linux Lite that I didn't want to keep.
Hate to cut across to you, but I wanted to finish the stuff I was watching, and I did watch all of Warrior Nun. That was really good too.
What
a little
that?
Slower than I was expecting, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, you really just wanted her to just like break out and start doing stuff, didn't you?
Right,
you knew she had these powers.
Start kicking some butt or something.
Right, you know she has these powers and stuff, and yet she like doesn't use them the entire show.
Is that another Netflix show?
Yep.
Yes, Netflix original show.
Well, I really enjoyed that first season of Special Unit too. That was good.
Well, the copy that I have is actually really good quality. So once we get that set up, I will get it sent over to you.
And
now, I will grant the easiest thing for me is BT
say,
Sync.
It reminds me of Warehouse 13, if you guys ever watched that.
Yeah, except like cheesier. That. Way cheesier.
Yeah, but it's a good one. I like the little gnome guy. Oh, a show just started on HBO I recommend is Lovecraft Country. Have you guys heard of that one?
I've seen ads for it.
Nope.
So the premise is it's in the 50s, and there's this black family, and the uncle writes a guidebook for other black people where they can go safely without being harassed around the U.S. And he'll list like certain restaurants and things, theaters and things like that are friendly to black people. And so the nephew of the uncle, his dad goes missing, but he goes missing in the area that Lovecraft always wrote about around Arkham in New England. But this place is called Ardham, and so he writes a letter, like a mysterious letter, to his son saying, I'm here, and they never hear from him again. So the premise, anyway, of the pilot is they're trying to travel up to Ardham and find his dad, but on the way, they run into, like, real bad races, and they have those sundown towns where black people aren't supposed to be after sundown, or they're getting in trouble or arrested or killed. But closer they get to Ardham, they start to find real creatures, like out of Lovecraft novel. Like there's these ones, the Shigara, I think they're called, that are in the forest that, have like 100 eyes and they're fighting these monsters too. So it's a really interesting mix of politics in that day, and then the whole magical angle of Lovecraftian monsters that live up there and around Lovecraft. So I recommend it. It's only one episode so far, but good. Oh, and I watched The Gambler, Kenny Rogers movie. I think today was his birthday. I think that was made TV. It was corny, but it was...
Damn, you almost hung on.
I saw it on Tubi TV, that a free streaming service. I really liked it. But I was going to watch The Coward of the County next.
I guess Netflix has got themselves in some hot water over their new movie, Cuties.
Yeah, I've heard something about that. But I can understand it. Then again, that's probably the way it actually is.
Yeah, I heard it had more to do with the way they advertised it. Like, the movie itself is like making a statement against, that sexualizing children and stuff and showing how bad it is. But the way Netflix advertised it is like for that, or it's sensationalizing that. But actually, the movie itself is actually the opposite. I think it's a French movie.
Yeah, I've seen the original artwork. It's very risque.
Yeah, Netflix changed the artwork and stuff to make it look like those. I don't know. What was that was so popular a few years ago? The little kid beauty pageant, stuff like that, sexualizing young children. I guess anything to get, what do they say, bad press or they're all press, whatever. People are talking about it now. But yeah, I really like the Umbrella Academy, that first season. I might go and Doom Patrol. I haven't started the second season of that.
Yeah, I was looking it up because I had expected the next episode to be out, but it turns out this season is complete. And I guess it's in limbo right now as to whether or not it gets a third season.
Really? How many episodes was second?
It was 9 episodes this last season, which isn't a whole lot.
Yeah, that's about like the first one. What was the first one? 9 or 10?
Let me check.
It's a shame that they canceled the Swamp Thing show. I really like that one.
Even make it all the way through the first season, and it was really good.
Yeah, I really liked it, especially compared to the 90s TV show, which I made the unfortunate mistake of watching before I watched that one.
15 episodes first season.
Oh, wow. Only 9. How many episodes? Is Stargirl over yet?
Stargirl is over for this season. I'm pretty sure it got renewed on the CW. Yeah, it got moved to the CW.
Yeah, that was definitely, it reminded me of the CW type of superhero shows, but I liked it.
Okay, at least Titans has announced a third season.
So no announcement for Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about a third season for Doom Patrol yet.
That's their, I mean, I think that's their best show that I've seen.
Well, Titans is pretty good.
I like Titans, but it's a lot more kind of straightforward storytelling wise. I really like the weirdness of Doom Patrol, but I understand it's kind of a little riskier show to make because it doesn't really appeal to as many people.
Especially since they're going to have to move it to HBO Max and basically get rid of DC streaming.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, like this season aired on both, and I don't know what they're going to do with Titans, but basically DC streaming is going away and HBO, it's going to be split up between a couple of other services because of the buyout that happened basically right after DC streaming started up.
Yeah, I have HBO Max, but I get it from AT&T as part of my fiber internet that just threw it in.
Yeah, Doom Patrol's on HBO Max.
I'll have to watch it there then. I just finished watching, do you remember the old Space Ghost on Adult Boom?
Space Ghost, Coast to Coast.
Yeah, that was a great show. Finished that on there. Oh, and that at Lovecraft Country is on there.
I may need to find a charger.
Other than that, I've been Linuxing like crazy lately. Anything new you watched, Honky?
New? No, it's mostly Umbrella Academy, Wynonna Earp. What did I rewatch? I know I rewatched A League of Their Own, which I forgot how funny parts that movie really was. There was another one I watched recently. Oh, have you ever seen the movie Screwed?
No. I don't know.
Dave Chappelle and Norm MacDonald.
Oh, no. I haven't seen that, but I've got that on my watch. I love both those guys.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Funny movie.
Is that where they try? Is that the one where they keep trying to like outrank each other or something?
Nope. Norm MacDonald is a butler for an old lady who basically gives him nothing, and he winds up pretending to kidnap himself, and, you know, mayhem ensues.
And The League of Their Own, I remember that one. That was pretty good. I watched an older one, Just One of the Guys, I think it was called. You guys remember that?
It's been remade a couple of times, but yeah, I do remember the original as well.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite movies in the 80s. It still holds up today. It's really funny.
Which one was that?
Where the girl dresses up or disguises herself as a boy to go to school, all boys school.
Oh, okay.
And then falls in love.
Right. Oh, what was the, my favorite version of that would have been, you ever see Ladybug?
No.
Yeah, that's kind of an inverse version and much more of a comedy than a drama.
Oh, yeah, kind of the same, yeah, the same idea, but like you said, more of a comedy than a drama.
Rodney Dangerfield.
Right.
Oh, well, I was watching that. I found another movie that I thought was a sequel to that. I was like, I didn't know they made a sequel called Just One of the Girls. I started watching that a little bit. I think it's on, I was watching on YouTube. That's nothing like it. Remember Corey Haim? He's in that one. And he drives himself a girl go to this school because it's like their music program is trying to get in, but it was so terrible.
Something new and different with a bad track record?
What?
A buddy of mine said the perfect new movie is something new and different with a good track record. Why so many movies come out in waves? Because somebody makes a hit movie and then everybody and his mother clone it.
Oh, that's true.
Also, I got some good news. Just looked at my email before jumping on here. The gentleman at Amazon have shipped my storage card.
Oh, the adapter?
Yep.
I had to step away for a second.
Yeah, this card will be slowly making its way here so that I can assemble my server.
That's all you were waiting on, wasn't it?
At the moment, and yeah, I've got a load of memory, I've got a couple of SSDs, and I've got one sort of lonesome Lenovo Tower server.
I don't have anything else entertainment-wise. What about you guys?
Unless you want to hear about Demon Accords Book 16.
What is that?
That's just a good series of books. Mostly good series of books. It's slowed down in the later books. I guess the author realized that they were plowing way too far ahead in the story compared to what they wanted to. If they wanted to extend things, kind of OP'd their characters early and left it that way. But it's still an interesting read.
I haven't been reading anything that man pages lately.
Well, I made it up to book 20 of the Drist Orden series, but I'm kind of stalled out halfway through that book, so I think that's where I usually get stuck, but I don't know. I'm going to try and finish and then skip on to the next one and see what happens. Other than that, Ben Heck on YouTube has been good lately. I'm not a major fan of his teardowns of graphing calculators, but the rest of his stuff is pretty good. The wife says I have to eat something before I can drink anymore.
Smart woman. Been playing a lot with the PinePhone, but you know, nothing really too interesting. Mostly just install a new operating system, play with it, take an SD card out, put another SD card in, play with it for a while. I hit a point though when I was my cell phone, the USB-C charging port on my regular everyday Android cell phone has been kind of it's way too loose, and I had a couple of days where I spent the entire day with the with it in like 35% charge because it wouldn't get a full charge, just praying that the thing doesn't die on me. So I was seriously looking at the PinePhone as to which, just in general, which operating system could I possibly use on a daily basis, and you know, which applications do I sort of need, that type of a thing. And luckily I've hit a point where I was able to do some filling with the phone where I actually had, you know, decent power over the last like 2 days, so it's not as close to being a necessity, but I kind of want to just one of these days pull the SIM card out and stick it in the PinePhone, just choose an OS that's going to be as close as possible, stick the SIM card in and see how long I can go with using it.
Well, why don't we start the show and then you tell us your top candidate.
My what?
Your top OS candidate so far, because I'm interested in which ones you think so far.
All right, let me just mark the time.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org. Or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net/techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Lying Rich, he's a bloody drunk.
If you don't like a guest, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it back.